This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, Johnny G, standing 6 foot two, 304 pounds from the south shore of Nassau County, Long Island. It's John Gabris. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson, Maine, from A Star Is Born. Abortion is healthcare. Yeah, I agree, man, but you're still a dated reference. Who abandoned Snoopy in the vestibule? Okay, slightly more updated reference of Leonard Bernstein, but a terrible impression nonetheless. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur is laying on his special towel that goes down on the couch now, because homeboy is getting incontinent in his old age. Oh yeah, peeps and poops are a major part of my life these days. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, you know her, you love her. I mean, I know her and I love her. You'll be the same soon if you don't. Oh, put your fucking hands together for Marcella Arguello!
It's me, I'm here, ready to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
It's the drive time. You're talking to Johnny G and Marcy. Hey, here we come. It's that time. It's time for love. I grew up listening to this shit, so drive time radio and half professional wrestling is like where my idea.
We grew up around the same age. How old are you?
I'm 42.
Yeah, I'm 39. We grew up in the same shit, brother.
Yeah.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh, yeah, brother. You know Mean Gene. Me and Marcella are similar ages. I knew that right away when you were calling out 90s comics, but referencing 90s comics on
I'm
one of your...
threatening Eugene Merman.
Yeah, you're like, I'm fucking coming for you, Wendy Liebman. I don't give a shit about your little asides. You're going down.
I hate your delivery.
Now, like, everyone does it.
Yeah, everyone copies it now. Has no clue she exists. Fucking idiots.
The fucking legend of that fucking...
Oh, my God.
Caddy aside, or however you want to refer to it.
Oh, my God. So funny. And no one does it as good as her. That's what's so... Anytime I see it, I'm just like, go watch Wendy Liebman clips, you fucking idiot.
I would say 25% of stand-up sets, and... comedy performances in general, I should say. Let me zoom out a little bit there. I want to say, you know who you kind of remind me of? Is this person. I would watch this person because they're very good at what you're trying to do.
It's also not a compliment. You tell people, you kind of sound like, and they're like, oh my God, thank you. I'm like, no, you fucking idiot. I'm telling you, you need to sound like yourself.
Yeah. It's, yes, Mitch Hedberg was great.
Yeah.
Like, but you gotta be great to do that.
Yeah. You want to do heroin? Then you need to stop. You need to figure out your style. What do you like to do?
I've been meaning to chat with you since I first met you on that random video game show. Me neither. It was at Meltdown. That's how long ago it was. This place that doesn't exist anymore.
Wait, what was it? I don't remember at all.
Someone was hosting like a show where we played bad video games, and I had no
Gondelman.
Idea who you were. Yeah, was it Gondelman?
I think it might have been.
Drucker? Maybe.
Oh, or it was Drucker. It was Drucker. Yeah. You're right.
Gondelman might have been there as well. Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, there was tons of us that day. It was a video game based show, so you're gonna get white 40-year-old white guy heavy. But we didn't know each other before that, but we randomly sat next to each other throughout the show, and I was like, this chick is hysterical. And
thank you. I don't remember that at all. That's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you didn't meet a giant Latina that was hysterical. So, like, if you do that, that's going to be a little more stuck in your craw than you met
bearded white guys
making...
Those 40-somethings. Yeah, you're right. Bunch of fucking dorks. I can't tell you apart. That's true.
Totally fair. But then, in recent... months, you've started a podcast that is near and dear to my heart, especially the topic. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I'm obsessed. This is the conversations I'm having with my friends and peers, even outside of the stand-up world.
That's cool.
Writing, improv, sketch, characters, all that shit. People are having the same conversations.
Yes.
And no one is recording them.
Yes. I'm the only one with the fucking labes to hit record and
this
tell you motherfuckers.
This bitch has got a pair of labes on her, that's for
you
sure.
You want to see some labes, brother?
But it's something that I've been dying to talk about, and I've been looking to book this interview, and because I'm wondering, is comedy dead?
Comedy is dead.
If it's not completely dead, it's if you looked at it versus itself 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it is way worse off.
It's on hospice or whatever. It's on hospice. And it could make it, but once you're in hospice,
yeah. And I don't know if it will make it in. It'll ever be the same again. And that's why also, I'm sort of battling with what my relationship with comedy is going to be going forward, like career and art form, two separate things, I think. And I have no idea, like. Like you mentioned on a recent episode of Comedy is Dead, which if you should watch all the episodes there on YouTube.
I will say if you're not like a comedy nerd or like a nosy comedy nerd, like it's not for you.
Right.
I'm not a big, like, I don't need it to do numbers. There's no sponsorship. I'm really doing this for the people who like you and me who give a fuck about comedy and the conversations around it. And how like people are scared to have these conversations out loud. Like I want it. Let's talk about it, you know?
And I'm not that plugged into the stand-up world, although I do know I've seen every special, know all the comics and stuff. So, like, for me, I'm one of those loyal 500 that are there every fucking week ready to hear what's going on.
That's so cool. What a compliment. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for doing it. But I would love to talk more. A lot of people are like, comedy is dead. And I feel like some people are conflating, I'm not making as much money in entertainment as I used to with comedy is dead. And I think those are two separate things, although they are feeding each other in a way. I don't think that's exactly the same thing as a lot of people are saying, but there's just something new, like fandom of things is like ruining things in specific ways, or at least from my old man perspective. And the fans seem to have too much power or too much sway, and it's causing this weird dynamic. Now, you're talking, we're comics, we're people who live off of our fans paying for to see us places or to pay our Patreon every month, whatever it might be. And so there's like this sort of democratization of like, you don't need Netflix to give you a special. If you put up a special on Patreon, you have 1,000, you can make the money. There's all that. And that's like cool because that's given a lot of opportunities to people who maybe wouldn't have made it mainstream. But it's also caused this sort of like, I don't want to say pandering, but it's like we used to like suck the dick of executives. Now we suck the dick of a fucking average Joe with an email job in middle America who has $8 a month to spare for the Patreon or whatever.
And like, that's why I can do the podcast, because I don't suck none of those motherfuckers' dicks. They can all suck my labes because I don't give a fuck. Like I will never forget when I was looking for agents for representation, I told them the same thing. I am not motivated by money. I don't come from money. I don't have some cushiony, like I'm really like out here, like I'll sleep in my fucking car before I suck a motherfucker's dick to get an opportunity. Like I don't give a fuck. And that's why I feel like I'm one of the few people that can actually get away with this podcast and that some of the subject matter I touch on, because I'm like, I ain't got no kids to feed. I ain't got no husband to worry about. Like no one controls me. And there have even been times in the past where a theater reached out to my reps and were like, she needs to delete this, that, and this off of her social media before. And my team was like, we do not tell her what to do. They said that to them. Because they're like, we're not doing that. I'm like the one that can kind of get away with some of this shit.
That's crazy. I was just about to ask about that because I feel like there's a difference in between. There seems to be, slightly less gatekeeping in touring, at least. Like there's not like... You could maybe, Hollywood could say, we'll never work with you, but you could still make five figures every weekend doing stand-up if you'd like.
Exactly.
There are a lot of people who live in that world. But I've never heard of, like, and again, I'm not that plugged in, but I've never heard of, like, clubs reaching out and being like, We saw this post you put up, and like,
isn't that crazy?
Because based on who else is getting booked on these fucking things, that's exactly. Really crazy.
I'm like, what is the line here? Like, they have no scruples. It's wild.
It's like, take down that post. It's like, you had someone who has a court case pending the weekend before.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, they sold out seven shows somehow. Fucking.
Yeah. And it was also that thing of like, when people hold whatever, you know, thousands of dollars over your head, and you're just like, fuck off. And they don't expect that answer.
No, it's the most powerful thing in the world. And I don't have, I'm similar. I have some steady money that comes in from podcasting. I am so quick to go, oh, no, sorry. There's already too many parameters to what this job, what you want from this.
Yeah.
But it feels like we're at a tipping point of some sort. Mm-hmm. You know, you said something in one of your recent episodes where you're like, in 2019, comedy wasn't dead. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. And it's been an eventful 5 years since 2019, to say the minimum. It's been a wild fucking ride for a lot of us.
Yeah.
But what do you think? What are some of the things you think are causing, what makes you think comedy is dead, or what makes you say comedy is dead?
Well, I think it's a lot of what you were talking about, right? The consumer has a lot of power now, right? Yeah. And so you get people who are pandering to their little audience that turns into a huge audience because they're like, I think about how like Latino comedy specifically, it's so funny because I'm like, bitch, if you say hot Cheetos in any of your videos, I hate you. You're pandering to a certain type of audience. Like, I hate you. And and that's what happens is you get enough people that are like, yeah, hot Cheetos jokes are the top of the comedy. You know, that's it. That's all there is. And that's what they watch. And they want to watch it over and over and over and over again. And if you're making your money only off of that, that's the only resource you have. And then you're also getting like, hey, McDonald's wants to give you an ad. After you do one of your viral hot Cheetos videos, we want you to do this McDonald's sponsorship. Like, you're going to say yes, because that's the only source of income you have, because now you're fucking at the mercy of these idiots that you're pandering to. And so these people go to a show, a comedy show, and they don't know how this shit works. They don't know what's good.
Both the performer and the audience that come from that world, they
so bad.
Neither party really knows what the fuck they're doing in these
it's
situations.
It's so bad. And so I regularly open for Ralph Barbosa right now. He's an interesting and unique situation. Someone who is actually very funny, very hardworking writer, very hardworking performer, who went viral. And like, I think within a year had 1 million fucking followers. Like, when I met him, he had 10,000 followers. He was just this little kid from Texas and nobody knew of. And then next thing you know, 1 million followers. And even he has such a hard time, like a push and a pull with his own audience, because they're so young. Like, they don't know how to watch comedy. And it's hard for him. It's hard for some of his openers. But it was so funny because just recently, a couple of days ago, I don't know if you saw that quote unquote autistic girl. Did a clip posted on Twitter, and it got shared. It went super viral. And she's like a beautiful body. So like, everyone, it was going viral because she was so hot. And it reminded me of this time I was bombing in front of Ralph's audience with great jokes. Like, my material is great. The 35 and over crowd, that few, like the 20 that were there, were loving my jokes. But the like 200 other kids, they're like 20-year-old Mexican guys. They fucking don't know how to watch comedy. So they certainly don't know how to watch my comedy. And I made a joke to them. I was like, I'm sorry I don't have a fat ass, so you guys can't figure out if you think I'm funny or not. Because they're so dumb that they're still at that age where like, a woman has to be hot in order to be listened to. And like, these are the people who are entertaining. And if you're an insecure person in that situation, like if I had any insecurities in myself, I would probably like, you know, crumble and, you know, have a hard time performing. But I'm just like, nah, you guys are fucking dumb. Like, you're lucky I'm performing in front of you. And those are the comedians that we need right now. We need more comedians that are like, no, you're wrong. I'm very good at this. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. We need people to teach these audiences how to enjoy comedy.
Though funny you say that. We do need less people saying, you're wrong, I'm actually funny. We need more people who that is a true statement coming from. Because I do feel like there's a lot of people that have that energy that I'm like, no, dude, you're 60 in a leather jacket and people aren't feeling you. I'm sorry. Yeah.
You're right. We need the actual funny comics to have a spine.
Well, this young people thing is wild because... anecdotally, I can see that young people have less of an attention span. It's hard. Like, people start chatting. People start always. And then they're like, I like this video. I watch this guy's videos from the comfort of my own toilet, home, mm-hmm, bed. Mm-hmm, and he's pretty funny. And I like them. And they're good looking. And the camera work is amazing. Then you go to a club or a show and you got to sit in the back and there's weirdos all around you. And it costs way more than just looking at an Instagram video.
Sure.
And it's an hour or 40 minutes and not a minute 30 where you can then immediately go to like a hot woman deadlifting in the next video or whatever. Like that's a real shift in experience. Like if you get a fan via social media and then they show up, and we haven't even like started touching on like what crowd work clips have done to like crowds at clubs, but like, let's stay on this. Yeah.
Wait. I was going to say, yeah, let's go back, because also the thing that people our age are forgetting, that's not registering, and I keep trying to remind people, is these people turned 21 in the pandemic. They turned 18, 21. They turned club age during a lockdown.
They lost a year of
more than a year. More than a year.
Exactly. Potentially a full year and change in a college where they could have grown up.
And they didn't. They were like, when do we go out? And what do I do when I go out? Oh, maybe I'll go see this guy. So now you're 4 years later from the beginning of the pandemic. You went from a 20-year-old to now you're 24 and you're going to your first comedy show at 24 years. How old were you when you went to your first stand-up or improv show?
Oh, dude, I saw George Wallace in Vegas at 20, but I definitely saw shows before. I saw Jackie the Joke Man Martin at Westbury Music Fair. My family were all Howard Stern heads, and I was like 15, and it was the raunchiest show I've ever seen.
Yeah, but it taught you, learned at a young age, but what a stand-up performance is, what a performance is, how to be outside of the house. And you're lucky you went at 15, because your parents, your family was like, chill out, you sit here and you watch this and we're going to enjoy it as a family, right? And then when you're seeing George Wallace in Vegas, fucking what a privilege, what an honor. You're also like, it's Vegas, so there's rules. There's ways that, you know, shit goes down there. And also, you're still a little baby and you're looking around. You're like, how's everybody else acting? But think about being 24 years old. You don't know how to do, you don't even know how to drink. You don't even know how to be out.
You spent 18 months like in your parents' house, like with them.
I think you're also being like, you're reducing the fact that these people, once they were allowed to be out of the house, they didn't want to get out of the house yet. It still took people a year and a half to actually have the balls to leave the fucking house because they weren't petrified or freaked out.
I understand.
Then on top of that, add to the fact that these young men have no clue how to ask a woman out. They have no clue that the comedy club is the perfect place to take a date. The first show I did with Ralph in L.A., it was at the Hollywood Improv, the main room. It seats like 200 people, all dudes, right? All young men around 20, 21, 22 years old. And you were just like, these fucking idiots have no idea that a comedy show is the easiest place to take a date. It's the easiest place to like trick a girl into feeling like she had a great time because of you. It has nothing to do with you, but they don't know that yet. They don't know any of those cheat codes to manhood. And it's like
above a movie, and it's more than just a dinner, and it's less than like come to my house and smoke a blunt with me. Like it's like a little mature to go out for an evening and have a couple of cocktails.
Exactly.
And laughter, we know, is wonderful foreplay. Shit, laughing together.
Yes.
Please, I've been only getting laid because I'm funny for like 25 years. So.
Yeah, that's the only reason, unlike what Gay was saying about you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I was, if I was Pan, I think I'd be cleaning up.
You would.
I'm cursed with heterosexuality.
And so that's why there's so many contributing factors to the concept of comedy being dead. Is like, we have to not just be good at stand-up. We have to teach these motherfuckers how to be. Because Ralph has repeated, I did a joke in Texas about like how when I was opening for Ralph, and I was like, because I ran it by him before I did it. Because I thought of it on the plane. So I was like, is this a good joke, guys, to the green room? And Ralph was like, do that joke. It was like, oh my God, I just flew in from California and I just think Texas is so magical because I landed and poof, all of my rights disappeared. Right? I do that joke. It does okay. Of course, it's Texas. But I remember Ralph just being like, yes, do that joke, because he likes challenging his audience. He's not like trying to pander to them.
Right, right.
And I love that, because I'm like, I love that he respects me and respects what my instincts are as a professional, because I know, I already knew going into that set, like, they're not going to love that joke, but I don't give a fuck. It's a good fucking joke. And the few people that are going to appreciate it are going to really appreciate it.
Well, he's a special case, too, because he went viral, but is a solid stand-up, right, and has been working in a stand-up, and also has a strong enough ego to have a powerful, hysterical person open for them.
That's and the like, thing.
And that's the move you got to do when you pop off out of nowhere, is you get a fucking opener that you can watch, learn, and bounce shit off of. And half the time I'm going to see a stand-up show, and it's like, there's a killer, fine. And then someone who I'm like, were they aware that they were going to have to like do 10 minutes? Like, were they this, like, is this a surprise? Like, is this a make-a-wish? Like, what the fuck is going on?
And that
on
person
here?
Always has their camera and their microphone, extra microphone. That person is always all set up, yes, with all the equipment.
Yes.
Yeah.
This spring, don't you want to eat a little stress-free? How about you try Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals? Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, and Veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages, whatever you need to stay fueled. So look, it's no fuss, no mess. This is what I like about it. You don't have to do any of the prep, cooking, or cleaning up. You just heat it and jam it down. I know I always say jam it down like I'm a disgusting pig, but you know what I mean. Heat it up, and then eat. It's like not long at all. I don't even have a microwave, and it's pretty easy to heat up in my oven. So I'd imagine it's even easier if you're the owner of a microwave. And you can customize your weekly meals. You know, it's a true easy solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. Like, truly has saved me a lot of time each week just having a few of these Factor meals to spread throughout the week. And we're celebrating Earth Day all month long, so look out for Earth Month Eats on the menu for low carbon footprint meals. Want to lower your carbon footprint and eat healthy, easy to prepare meals? Then Factor's your boys. Factor's your guys. Factor's your peoples. Head to factormeals.com/mighty50 and use code mighty50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MIGHTY50 at factormeals.com/mighty50. 50% off your first box, 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Dang, dude. AG1. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. And that's why I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1. It's tested for so many contaminants and banned substances. While the industry standard only typically tests for 10, they test for 950. They care about product quality. But here's the thing that I like most about it. It's simple, okay? It's a simple, easy way to get prebiotics and probiotics and whatever else you're looking at. Vitamin C, zinc, folate, magnesium, ashwagandha, all that important stuff, all the stuff that's in the buzzy cortisol cocktail, all the stuff that people are talking about, you can get in AG1. I'm personally need all the biotics help I can get with that gut health. So for me, having an easy to manage glass of AG1 every morning, smooth, baby. That's how I start my day. Before I even have my coffee, I take a nice glass of AG1. It's a simple step to start my simple day with a big, healthy choice. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/mighty. That's drinkag1.com/mighty. Check it out. This whole element of like what the audience expects from stand-up now. And I also, while we're talking about how fandom is steering stand-up, fandom is like weirdly getting kind of siloed in stand-up too, where you're like, I'm a Skanks guy. I'm an alt guy. I really like these people. I like the people that come up. And besides the actual like regionalism of stand-up of like, I love my Bay Area comics. I love my New York comics or whatever. There's also sort of like, oh, I don't even listen to this. I don't even know who this person is because I'm over here with like Tim Dillon, Shane Gillis, and whoever else. And I'm not even getting into who's good and who's bad here. Right. But like, it's one of those things where it's like, well, if you like these guys, you might also like this person you've never heard of because they're also a joke slinger type comic or whatever. Yeah. But I think we get so weirdly loyal. We meaning people now.
For no reason.
Yeah, it makes none of them are asking you to do that. No one's like, you could only listen to me. You don't watch Chappelle, and Chappelle's like, don't watch anyone else.
And that's the other thing. Chappelle actively, as much as he's a piece of shit, he does actively have different openers all the time in different states.
He's putting putting Donnell on for fucking 3 decades.
If it wasn't for him, Mo Amer wouldn't have a fucking show. There's no fucking way they would have gave him a show if he wasn't buddied up with Chappelle, which is insane. That show was so good.
He's so funny. Yeah, and that's a great example. Like, that's powerful shit. Here's something while we're just talking about Chappelle. Nothing about his, we can get into his awful material.
It's awful.
Yeah. My thing, and I've been quoted as saying this, is I'm let down. I am a Chappelle fan, and I'm just let down by, I don't care about the topic, but if it crushes, it crushes, And if it doesn't crush, and you talk about it 3 specials in a row, and none of them crush, and it's the same topic, the lady doth protest too much.
Absolutely. I also just like the first special she did, I remember just being like, oh, that's lazy writing. He's back. That material is old. And he did even admit that those first couple specials had material from when he resurfaced back after the Africa shit, when he was doing all those crazy hours in San Francisco, which I went to those shows. But I was like, oh, that's why some of this material feels dated. So I remember giving him a pass on that first one. I'm like, oh, I get it. He's just like reusing his old shit that he just was like, I don't know where to put this. So let me just do this, $1 million deal and put this old material. And I was like, all right, as a comic, I understand that. Being like, I'm going to just use this old shit get this money.
3/4 of the way through a special already. Okay, yeah, perfect. I just need 20 more minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. But then it kept happening, and I was like, bro, this is lazy writing. Like, because this is not, you're not even trying to, because I'm a big, like, you're supposed to be the genius, so shouldn't you have the material that no one else has touched? But, like, I saw this shit 5 years ago at Tribal Cafe off some fucking crazy motherfucker that didn't wash his ass. Like, and you're doing it, David Chappelle? That's crazy.
You want GOAT status, like, challenge yourself. Like, show me, like, something new that you're, and I believe he's capable of shit.
Oh, he totally is.
The thing that bums me out about it is, like, and I know it's not exactly a hard numbers game, but a huge announcement, Netflix gives him $80 million for a handful of specials. Right. Now, we know a bunch of stand-up comics who probably have a solid hour. If you can give each one of them $250,000, that's 320 comics getting $250,000 for their special, life-changing amount of money for whoever gets that, the Shang Wangs, the Blair Sakis, the Amy Millers, whoever you're a fan of, every one of them gets $250,000, life-changing amount of money. All of their specials go out. Netflix puts out 320 specials in 2 years or whatever. Maybe 32 of them, 10%. Absolutely crush, and you've developed, now you have a fucking crop of new talent coming out, and not to be like Johnny leftism socialism here, but you fucking spread the wealth around a little bit, and that's gonna be so much better. And Cord Jefferson, the guy who directed American Fiction, said the same thing at the Oscars. He's like, how about less $200 million movies and 10 $20 million movies? Right. And it's so real. But the idea that Netflix wasn't trying to get good specials. They were trying to get their stock numbers to jump because the announcement of Chappelle and all that shit just starts to feel whack. And it's like upsetting because it's like, we all know slews of people and you would hit across the spectrum of race, creed, color, gender, absolutely, all that shit. And you, who knows? Knocking over fucking ashtrays, classic
so
stoner
upset.
Thing.
So upset.
Well, I'm a stoner, so I'm surrounded by glass, and I'm Italian, so my arms swing around even when sure. I'm talking on a podcast. Sure. It's high risk, low yield over here. But, and for that, like, you can have a whole slew of new people making new shit, and Netflix gets 320 hours of fresh material mm-hmm. added to their fucking algorithm. And the fact that they don't, they still give a lot of people specials. Kudos to them. But, like, that seems so fucking crazy. It's like
it really is. It's so sad. And it's sad because it is what is ruining comedy. Like, it is making it worse because it's like they're not investing in people that back in the day. I mean, I grew up watching Premium Blend on Comedy Central. So it was just like, oh my God, who's that? I'm going to look them up. And, like, you know, you hope that they have a Comedy Central special. You hope that, like, you just want to spend more time digging. And it's such a bummer that doesn't happen. It's interesting, those examples that you gave, because Shang got put on because of Ali. Blair is getting put on because of Funches. Like, it's so yes. frustrating how, like, people who are wildly talented, like Ali Wong, she's taking a risk because she's like, no, this is worth it. We all know Shang is worth it, but the networks don't know Shang is worth it. And that's what's so frustrating, because it's like, I'm sorry, you go watch Shang Wang and you don't think he's worth investing in without Ali Wong attached? It's so fucked.
It's so weird. Yeah. And it takes Ali Wong, an absolute crusher.
Yeah.
Because they go back to the same well. Nothing against her. Get your bag. Do as many specials as yeah. they'll have you. That you haven't had a flop yet. You haven't had a dud yet. Keep ripping. But at the same time,
we don't need to lie on here. But, you know, go ahead.
Well, I don't think any one of them.
The numbers are good. The numbers are good.
Yeah. But Netflix goes back to them for, like, hey, can you do a fourth special? And it's like, how about, you know, you get two more from
a She's a movie star. She's a right. television star. Like, she has so much more to do because she did. That's the other thing. Let's talk about how Ali Wong's first special was self-produced by her. She invested her own fucking money because these fucking morons wouldn't do it. And do you know that HBO, they told me this. I think I talked about this on the pod. HBO changed their policy of allowing self-produced specials because of Ali Wong's Netflix hit. That's how fucking yeah. wrong they are about every choice they make. Every rule they make is wrong. You need artists and creatives who are actually good at what they do, actually have creative instincts that will benefit fucking everybody. And look, Lynn, she's killing it.
I know. It's eternally frustrating, because now, to just, you know, bring Hollywood into the conversation, the same shit's happening in comedy, in that, I mean, Ali Wong's a good example. They'll go to Ali Wong for 20 fucking movies and TV yeah. shows, and there are, you know, 19 other people that could easily do, like, love Patton Oswalt, but he's a guy who I don't know if he needs to be doing the guest stars. Paul yeah. Giamatti doesn't need to be doing commercials. Like, this used to be the world where, like, middle-class actors, struggling actors, could get health insurance for a year, or, like, there used to be, and this is a bigger conversation, but I feel like you'd be game for this. There used to be a little bit of shame in earning money. That you used yeah. to want to be, like, you used to try to have some integrity, and it used to be, like, you used to have to go to Japan to make a commercial if you were right, a big right. celebrity. Now, like, fucking John Hamm is in, like, H&R Block spots. Like, everyone is downgraded to, like, fandom has become get your bag. Everyone's just rooting
Absolutely.
For it. I remember, I've talked about this so much, but I remember after the Apple ads of Hodgman and Justin Long,
sure.
they went to Dimitri Martin for those MSN ads to, like, kind of counter it. Right. And I had heard that Galifianakis was offered that first, and it was a huge deal, and he turned it down. God and to him. Me, that was the last I heard of, like, a comic being like, I'm more of a stand-up comic than a Microsoft Network salesperson, yeah, yeah. you know? But since then, you said it earlier, like, a front-facing comic's like, yeah, I'll do a McDonald's. Well, I would too. I'm not going to lie now at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm like broke, and it's getting a little desperate, you know? I'll do all this shit. But it used to be like, once you have several million dollars, like, take a fucking week off, see your kids,
yeah. spend Invest some in time. Invest in the stock market, bro.
Yes.
Get some real estate
moving. Launch a fucking tequila company like the rest of them, you know?
Yeah.
Like all these people do so fucking much now, and no one is like, Ryan Reynolds, cool it. The Rock, right. cool it. We're all like, also, thank you. I hope you become a billionaire.
But yeah, that's the other thing, specifically with The Rock, is like, you know that double strike is bad when The Rock is back at the WWE. Like, you know shit fucked him up. I mean, like, he's so used to working that that double strike put him back into wrestling mode. Like, that's how desperate he got. I know, you don't want to do that.
No, he's a he's a literal business. He's a human fucking business, and he's got to jump back to wrestling because the money hose was turned off for 9 months or whatever.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? It's like, couldn't you just, I don't know. I don't know if people don't know what they are doing with their money. Maybe that's part of the issue. They don't know how to properly invest.
Yeah, that's another thing I'm always worried about, because like, my dream is to like have enough money that I say no to bullshit.
Yes.
Like that I just do what I love and like spend time and fuck around and goof off and be with my friends and family. But some of these motherfuckers are like, no, I want my kids' kids to have boats. You know what I mean? And it's like, fuck, dude, they'll sell your house. You don't need to like shoot this. And so it feels like so many people are like doing whatever, like, and so many non-hardcore stand-ups are putting out specials because it's money out there. So many non-broadcast professionals are launching podcasts because it's money on the table.
Right.
And now all these markets are inundated with celebrities doing these things, and they get like that pop of instant fandom, but none of them have the skill set. So the example of like the Instagram character comedian who's now got to do 45 minutes on the road versus all these, like, you just see it happen rampantly, and you're like, this is not going to be good in the fucking long run. No new people are getting any fucking experience. No one's grinding. No one's getting an opportunity to be on set, to be in a writer's room, because it's all the same fucking people who never go away.
Right. I also feel like I don't know if they know, or if they do know that this is a cash grab right now, because they don't know what the future looks like, which is different than watching Angela Bassett take streaming television shows as her gig. You're like, Angela Bassett, you've been reduced to shows on streamers? Okay.
Yeah, right. You actually just touched on something, that it is scary out there for what the future holds financially. And like, we also know what happens if you're poor in America, like how that is nearly a death sentence. So it's hard to not blame Paul Giamatti, who's like, fuck it, I'll do a Verizon ad. I'll dress as Ben Franklin. I'm a fucking Academy Award winning actor, and this is what I'm doing with myself.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That's what's so intense about it.
It's hard to get mad at them because you're like, fuck, you're right. The world could be crumbling. Like, comedy is dead, right?
Comedy is dead. Yeah. The industry is dying. It's dead. There was an article that just came out. I forget. What was it? Harper's? And they have a really good article about the industry and how shitty it is right now.
I just read that long ass. The thing about like Hollywood writer's rooms and stuff like that. Yeah, I just read that. That was brutal and
it's depressing. I really read it a little bit, and I was like, I'm going to read this later when I'm in a good mood, because I can't read this when I'm not feeling good.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I read it on the exercise bike. So that was a real depressing combo.
Just pedaling towards doom.
Yeah. Like, oh, cool. I'm on a treadmill in my career and in real life.
Yeah, but that is why I'm going to move to Chicago, because I was like, I need to change, because I'm blaming my I don't want to call it my interest, but my profession, comedy, stand up. I'm blaming my lack of success in stand up right now on something that it's affecting everybody. Like, it has nothing to do with me. I've always known it has nothing to do with me, but it's hard to like, you know, you see an empty calendar and you're just like, wait, am I bad at my job? But in reality, everyone's calendar is empty. Everyone's freaking out. And I started realizing LA, just for stand up, like, I can't speak on anything else. I don't know how for improv. I don't know about for actors. I don't know what the situation is. But for me, I just know that it's not inspiring to perform around town in LA anymore. Like, even the cool shows that were once cool on a Monday night are not that cool anymore. They're not that fun. The audiences are not that fun.
The crowds dwindled and got worse behavior-wise, it feels like, in LA. It's harder to sell. I like did a few shows with my buddy Adam Pally. We were doing like a live version of our old travel show. We sold out New York in a heartbeat. We sold out Texas in a heartbeat. And then when we came to LA, where we think we would have, we had banger guests and stuff, and it was like a struggle to sell out Dynasty Typewriter. And we're like, oh, it's LA. And Adam had just done a tour too. So he's like, no, dude, I can sell out every city but Largo. Like, I can't sell out like my hometown, more or less. And I'm like, people don't go to shows here, it feels like.
Yeah,
and
not anymore. Not that you definitely, there was a time where it was like really fun to do certain spaces. And now it's just everything feels like a struggle. And I was like, every time I was visiting Chicago to visit my boo, I was like, man, these shows are so fun. Like, it didn't matter what night of the week it was. I actually know the moment I had first considered moving to Chicago. The Laugh Factory on their Instagram stories posted either a video or a picture of the line wrapped around the Laugh Factory of audience members trying to get into the open mic on a Sunday at 6 o'clock. They were, or some shit, some obscure shit like that. And I was like, excuse me? That's the vibe you guys have for your stand-up at the Laugh Factory? That is so crazy to me. And it was the first seed that I was like, maybe I should do more stand-up here. Like, and at first it was like, oh, when I'm visiting my boyfriend, I'll, you know, do more stand-up. And then it turned into like, oh no, this is like the shit. Like, and it's better in my opinion than New York, because New York is still industry adjacent. So there's still people like that they treat going to shows as a write-off. Like, I'm just going because I can write it off. I can see this person, I can write it off. And that's the vibe in LA and New York. But I feel like in New York, it's a little worse, but it just in that mindset. But Chicago, you don't have that. Like, you don't have that at all. Like, the thing I hated about LA shows, like when I used to do Women Crush Wednesdays, like industry would come, which is fine, but they would like sit in the front and intimidate these poor girls that are like their first time performing at the Hollywood Improv, or Nicole Byer working on new shit. Like, they don't want. And then I'm doing crowd work, like, oh, what do you do, sir? I work at Netflix. Why the fuck would you say that? Go sit in the back, you fucking moron. Why?
Yeah.
Like, LA is so, like, people here are so dumb. The industry is so dumb. It's like, don't say that. Some of these girls, it's their first time doing a big show. Some of these girls are working on new shit. Now you said that, and now they're all tripping. They're all fucking tripping.
And they want that. That Netflix guy wants that.
Exactly. And it's so annoying. And it's just like, I hate that. And then in New York, you're not going to get that, but you are going to still get the vibe of like, I'm here because I'm doing my work. But
yeah, there's three 45-year-old guys in suit jackets back there. What the fuck are they doing at, Mundire's?
Yeah. Exactly. And then Chicago have not had that vibe at all. And all the audiences are so mixed. Like, you literally can get booked on a Thursday anywhere. And you're just like, there's tech bros here. There's like a group of black and brown girls that are just out for a night. There's like tourists that are, you know, from the Midwest. And they're just like, this is a new experience. And you're just like, this is so fun. This is like, it reminds me of what comedy on the road is, especially like up and down California. You get more mixed audiences and they're so fun. But you don't get that in these major cities that where comedy is supposed to be cracking, and it's just not cracking anymore. And I don't know why everybody's acting like it's not cracking, like, or that it is cracking. They're all acting like it is cracking, and you're like, guys, what? Why are you lying to yourselves?
No, man. And I mostly come from the UCB, which, you know, shut down in the pandemic and reopened and is not the same as it once was. Like, all that shit has changed. That's kind of scattered the crowds a little, and also people. But you moving to Chicago appeals to me in that sort of like, because I want you out of my fucking city. No, it appeals to me because, like, not, you know, different tiers of success here, but like Bargatze moving to fucking, moving to Tennessee. And you're like, oh,
Cal Canaan going to Portland.
Yeah.
David Borey in Denver.
Right. If you're a touring stand up, why would you pay?
Pick a town, any town.
Why would you pay LA and New York prices if you're already established? You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to just go out on the road doing your own shows and opening for big acts.
Exactly.
Like, why not pay not coastal rent somewhere? Yeah. You know? And then it's like, and Chicago is a city that also has a good scene.
It's so
you
insane.
You can do reps. You can go there. You can host a fucking show. You can launch your own show.
I'm doing my new monthly. I have a new monthly I'm going to start out there called Comedy is Dead, pure stand-up. When you're in town and you want to come do whatever the fuck you want. It doesn't need to be stand-up. It's just more like, we want people to appreciate what we got going on as performers.
Hell
it's not dead. Like, I'm also trying to replicate what I did with Women Crush in a new city, but in a town that appreciates comedy. Because it really was like pulling teeth at first when I started Women Crush, but eventually I curated such a good audience that they didn't give a fuck what the lineup was. I never had to announce it. They were buying tickets. It was amazing. And
that's
it was
the
like,
fucking dream, where you're not worried about having a get that will bring people, and you're just like, no, the vibe is right. And then then gets show up, then people are like, well, I'll do women crush one day. I don't give a fuck that whatever else is gone. And that's that shit. I don't know if you could like start a new comedy show here monthly or weekly and have it be popping off in I don't know if it's possible.
Time. Yeah, I don't know. You got to have some kind of established something. And even then it's like, it's like pulling teeth in LA. It's really frustrating. It's just a lot of work for someone. I remember that was part of the reason I ended it. I was like, this is so much work for me. And it's such a great show, but it's too much work for what is happening at every week or every month. And it just wasn't enough. Like, I was like, I'm exhausting myself and this is not worth it. But I feel like in Chicago, I'm like, this is about to be, I can feel that it's going to be fun every week. And I can, because also I don't need to be perfect every week. I don't need to worry about industry being there. I don't need to worry about any of that bullshit. And I'm excited. And also this is going to be like, it's not just going to be women. It's going to be everybody. And I'm excited for that because there was a certain point where I was like, I just miss hanging out with some guy comics, I guess. I didn't think I would ever miss those nasty motherfuckers.
You might be the one person I've ever heard say that.
You know what? It took running a woman's only show. Like, I was like, I do kind of miss these dorks. Damn.
Well, also, when you're running those shows and you're busting your fucking ass and then you get like the check after you pay everyone and you're like, oh, wait a minute. This is not working.
It's a lot of work. And what's cool is I'm going to work on a solo show in Chicago because the hour I was working on last year, I was like, oh, some of these topics are getting kind of heavy and in a way that is not working in a club. Of course they're not. And I was like, I think I'm ready for a solo show. And I'm excited because I have so much interesting and some dark material that I'm like, yeah, I wasn't working at any club. It had to be people that really fucking got me. Like, it worked in San Francisco, it worked in Sacramento, it worked at Women Crush, but anywhere else it was like, oh no, these, and I wasn't popular enough for like to do like a fucking Robin Williams suicide joke. Like, it was like, nah, like you gotta, these, you can't just do it anywhere. And I'm excited because I've never worked on a solo show and I'm fucking so excited to do it in Chicago because that's the place to fucking do it without the pressures of anything.
Now, maybe some listeners are going like, well, stand-up technically is a solo show.
First of all, let's talk about that. Let's talk about how Netflix and Hasan Minhaj fucked everybody's brain over when they claimed that his first hour was stand-up. And it wasn't. He knows it wasn't. It wasn't his call to make, you know, to title it as a stand-up hour. He was like, oh, it's a solo show. It's a solo show. And those dumb fucks at Netflix, they called it a stand-up hour. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, this is my favorite stand-up special. And it's like, well, that's crazy because it's not stand-up. It's not pure stand-up.
Yeah.
And that's been the snowball effect of like how people don't fucking know how to identify what stand-up is anymore.
I blame him.
He's a close personal friend and I blame him.
The one-person show versus stand-up kind of is an ongoing argument. I know Hannah Gatsby activated it amongst people for a while. But It's not that big of a deal if you are prepared for whatever you're going into, but for some people, they expect a one act and sit down and see a pure stand-up or vice versa. That is, and that's again just going to like the literacy of audiences of knowing the art form that they're going to see, you know, and like it would be like going to a museum, but you've only ever seen like pop art in like a 20-second GIF on your phone. I got to walk around for 3 hours and just look at paintings.
You've only been to the ice cream museum, you know, that stupid shit. Like, that's the only museum you've been to. And you're like, and then you go to fucking the Louvre and you're like, what the fuck? This is a lot of walking.
Who's Caravaggio? You know, like that shit is like, this is when I start to feel like an old man. And
Do it, Grandpa.
I'm like, my education has been so agnostic and so open in like in the art form I've consumed. Like outside of even comedy, but within comedy, I grew up watching Def Comedy Jam in Living Color. I grew up watching Evening at the Improv. I loved Whose Line Is It Anyway? I liked Kids in the Hall, SNL, Conan, like all this shit all over the map. And it prepared me, even more than an actually good comedy performer. I'm a great comedy audience. I'm well-versed in what everyone's going for. I'm a laugher.
And your family was taking you to shows, it sounds like, at a young age. I'm not sure what you were going to before that, whether it was comedy-related or not, but I'm assuming that they were taking you to other shit when you were younger than that.
Yeah. I mean, seeing concerts, seeing whatever. Yeah, like
that's the same as me, dude. We have the same story because that's why I can appreciate all comedy. That's why I can recognize that the shit is weird right now, because I'm like, dude, we were so spoiled. Like, I shouldn't say we. I should say anybody that was smart enough to consume both the black and white entertainment that was happening in the 80s and 90s, we were so spoiled in a way that I'm like, no one has that anymore. Like, you can't watch In Living Color and Saturday Night Live. You can't watch Martin and Seinfeld. You, like, people aren't doing that. Even though it's accessible to them, they're not finding a fresh new show that has a group of black people and then a group of, you know, neurotic New Yorkers. Like,
right.
People are not multi-consuming anymore. It's like they really are just watching that girl with the hot Cheetos jokes over and over and over again. Like, that's all they want to watch. They just want their one thought, their one perspective validated. They don't even want to, like, search within themselves, like, other fucking perspectives. And
person, they find the hot Cheeto chick, they go to her podcast, she has a co-host who has that, and then they become fans of that. And, like, it's all from this one little world. Yeah. They don't get to get open mind. Dude, saying Martin and Seinfeld is very funny, because those were, like, two of my favorite shows when I was a kid.
I was 12 years old, that's what I was watching.
Yeah, I was like, Martin, Seinfeld, and Simpsons. And I watched a shit ton of cartoons. I love the idea that you could find anything you want to watch now and put on whatever. That's so rad. But I think not being able to choose what you watched all the time growing up, like with sharing a TV with your parents or siblings.
Right.
Or the only thing on TV right now that isn't the news is Bewitched. So right. I'm a 10-year-old kid watching a black and white fucking sitcom and trying to find enjoyment in it, because TV fucking is better than homework, exercise, engaging with your family. So, like, you found all these things and found ways to enjoy them and found, like, oh, I guess I'll watch this. Oh, I'll watch another episode. Like, and now I think audiences are, and this is, again, old man Gabers here, audiences are so used to being able to just, like, take their iPad, type in whatever they want, that when they go to a stand-up show that, and I'm using the term challenge very loosely, that challenges their ultimately, their, like, ultra-myopic worldview, even if it's just trying to nudge it 1% in either direction, that's uncomfortable for people.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I like nothing more than to watch someone say something and be like, holy shit, I've literally never thought about that. I couldn't even wrap my head around this perspective.
Oh my God. Yesterday, when we were taping after midnight, so River Butcher came. River Butcher, I've known for years. River Butcher, for those who don't know, hilarious comedian who is a trans man. And he, you know, what we're talking about, we've watched comedy forever. We've watched everything forever. We know all the jokes, like the hot Cheetos joke. We know what it is. You see it coming. River was, like, riffing when we were in the green room, just, like, shit-talking, whatever, or working on whatever. He was doing these, like, little jokes that were so funny, and they were so funny. And then he even pointed out, he's like, Marcel, you keep laughing at all my trans jokes. I'm like, because they're new. Yeah. There was a point where
I've never, like, sat down with my notebook and been like, let me come up with some trans jokes.
There was a moment where, you know, somebody comes in and is like, Marcella, you need to be ready in like 15 minutes. So I had to change, right? So the last time I was on After Midnight, we were like rushing, working on stuff. So I made the writer I was paired with, Dave Thomas, and I was like, turn around, Dave. And I like change right behind him so that we could keep working, because all I care about was like, let's get this shit, you know, good. So I'm changing. So when they said that to me, I was like, oh, I have 15 minutes. Like, I don't need to rush changing. So so Dave goes, do you want me to turn around? And before I could say, oh no, that's all good, River goes, I'll turn around too. And I was like, no, I'm going to change in the bathroom. And River's like, I paid a lot of money to be able to turn around in these situations. I was like, that's so funny.
Please tell me to turn around. Please think I'm a creep. Yeah. I want the real man experience.
That's so funny. And I have never heard anyone say something like that, or like riffing, you know, like off the top of the head and shit like that, where he was saying jokes like that, where it was like, yeah, duh. Yeah. You, oh my God. And it's so funny. I have never in my life heard that thought. I've never heard that thought before. That, which is, goes back to what you're saying about the Chappelle shit, where it's like, oh, that's lazy. There's so many original thoughts to be had, and you're really choosing not to touch on any of them, even though we know you were the original material guy for how many years?
Yeah, absolutely crushing for so long. Yeah, I wish he would just, like, dig into himself a little bit, even, like, you know what I mean? Like, just, it feels like he lost some layer there. And it happens. It happens with older people. Yeah. It happens with super successful people. Yeah. And it happened and he's both, what I mean? It also just happens with wealthy people. Wealthy people just lose one touch of reality.
One of my favorite exchanges was Eddie Murphy and Jerry Seinfeld on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, where they're talking about money makes you not funny. You are not funny if you have a lot of, which is also maybe why I kind of love that I'm still kind of struggling a little bit. I got little savings, but it could all fall apart. But guess what? That keeps you ready and hungry and a little on edge,
Well, for us, not to put us both in the same category here, but financial success or career, quote unquote, career success, the way it looks like traditionally in Hollywood, hasn't happened for either of us. But for me, I pride myself that my peers think I'm funny.
Right.
And that is my commodity. So I will chase that more than I'll chase a new thing that pays me, a new thing that is shiny or whatever. That's the best validation. More validation than having an NBC sitcom is having people I think are funny also think I'm funny.
Absolutely.
That matters more to me
but
than anything.
That also comes from the fact that you've always been yourself. We obviously haven't been friends for very long, and I would argue that you are the same dude you were for the most part when you were 15 years old. And I'm the same person
similar.
I was. I'm pretty similar to who I was at 15 years old, 7 years old. I mean, people have met my friends that have known me since I was a single digit. And they'll be like, they'll corner my friend. Oh, how was she when you guys were kids? And she's exactly like this person that you guys know. She's this is not an act. This is who she is. She's a fucking asshole sometimes, but we love her. When you have always been yourself, it's a priority for people to respect you for being you. And I feel like a lot of people, they are oh no, I'm going to be a new version of myself than I was and what a loser in high school I was. Because I wasn't a fucking loser in high school. I guarantee you weren't a loser in high school.
A dork, but I was confident in who I was.
Exactly. Yeah.
And also people who have stage personas. I get it if it's a style, a Jezel neck or something like that. But that's not too far off from what he's actually either.
Yeah.
But he probably talks a little faster when you're hanging out with him.
Right.
But that, I wouldn't fault it. But there are people who straight up are this is who I pretend to be on stage. And I'm now you're getting, in my book, you're getting into one person show territory and away from stand up. If it's if it's that much of an act, maybe that's another thing to put in the differences between stand up and one person show.
Well, and that's the thing about what's fucking Get Her Done. What's his name?
Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah, it's also at least he knew going into that shit that he was I'm trying to sell out as a hick. They didn't know that. His audience didn't know that.
Right.
But he knew that. And he was I'm just trying to be rich. I don't get it's very obvious that's what he was trying to achieve. And he achieved it in the same way that Steve Harvey, now we know what a piece of shit he really was this whole time.
All that fucking backlash, hearing all that shit from the Kings is wild.
It's very crazy.
Yeah, I'm so because I loved the Kings.
Yeah,
economy.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and then it's so fun, and then you feel validated because Steve is maybe your least favorite.
Absolutely,
and you're
that's why we all were these stories are all true. I mean, I remember hearing the Bernie Mac story many years ago about how he called and tried to get a spot, but I was he always kind of sucked. So it's that makes sense. And that's the reality, right, bro? The people like us, we're like, I'm gonna say no to some shit. If you don't like me for me, I don't fucking want you to like me. I don't care if you don't like me.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me.
But then there's people that are I just want to be rich. And they'll go by any means necessary to do whatever they got to do. And that's why it's hard. It's frustrating because sometimes Paul Giamatti, we'll just use him because we've already used him as an example. You're like, why did he take this commercial? Is he just trying to get out of the house? Is he really money hungry? What's really going on here? You kind of wonder.
Is the director a buddy of his and was like, hey, I'm doing this Verizon commercial. It'd be so funny if you did it. You probably make
not just so funny. Can you do me a favor? Think about the shit we've done for someone else as a small favor. And we're not even at that level. That's why it's so hard to figure out what's really going on. You really just wanted that paycheck? Are you doing a favor? Do you just want to get out of the house? Why did you agree to this?
Yeah. Are you getting a divorce? You want to put a second floor on your house? That shit, it makes sense. Whatever motivates you, whatever gets you there. But that starts to feel crazy. And look, I've done shit just for the money before.
Sure.
Okay. You know, catch me going. Hey, listeners of this podcast probably just heard two ads about some shit that do I really fucking use it? Who fucking knows? But if you're going to give me three figures a week,
right.
I'm
right.
going to take it.
Right. I mean, and that's what's so frustrating is like, you know, you have to find a compromise for yourself. Everyone has to. You have to, which is why I was like, I need to go to Chicago because I was like, I'm not trying to compromise right now. Like, this is such a tricky time for people. And I was like, I do not want to be in a place where I just, here's the thing. My mom does my taxes, right? I remember years ago, I thought I wasn't successful. I was like, I'm not doing well. And I mean, I wasn't in enough things and I didn't make enough money. It was not just one or the other. It was like, it felt like both. It was like, I'm not doing enough and I'm not making enough money. This is so fucking frustrating. And I was like complaining to my mom about it. And she was like, and it's so weird because you make so much money. And I was like, what? She's like, you make so much money. I was like, I do? I literally had no clue because I just didn't look at it from the perspective that she was looking at it, which was if it wasn't for that LA rent, you would have so much more money. You would not be this stressed out. And I was like, oh shit, you're right. That is the one thing that's stressing me out. And I, ever since she said that, this was, I don't know how many years, this might've been 2018 and or 2017 even, anyways. And it was the first time someone like basically some, not an outsider, obviously she's inside, but it was like to have someone kind of validate like, no bitch, you're doing better than fine. You make more than a lot of people, but because you're fucking at the mercy of LA rent.
Because you Postmates a $64 breakfast of an egg sandwich.
That's the thing. I wouldn't even do that shit. I was living like I was struggling, but right. I wasn't struggling. And so I would, thank God I can cook. Cause I would like cook hella shit and I would do my thing. And I was like, oh my God, all the money I saved doing all this, you know, money saving techniques. And it's not that. It wasn't that the whole time. And it was so eye-opening, and it made me realize, what you were saying earlier. It's like, if I go to Chicago, I can, like, reduce my rent. I can make as much, if not more, money now. And because there's, like, not a lot of opportunities. Everybody's kind of getting fucked over right now. So it's like, man, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing because
lowering your overhead rather than trying to raise your income is oddly freeing. Like I fantasize because I make a lot of my money doing podcasts, which we're currently doing from two undisclosed locations.
Right.
Like that to me is like, why don't I live in the fucking, in a random ass beach town somewhere? Why don't I live somewhere where the rent is half of what it is here and the cost of living is way lower? And then I lose out on some LA gigs that pay me decent money, but I don't need them as much because now I'm here. Now I have more free time and I go out to my fucking yard with chickens or I put dishes in the dishwasher, you know, things I'm 42 and I've never had a yard or a fucking dishwasher. Yeah. I make more money than both of my parents did put together and they had three kids and a
That's
house.
Crazy.
I have zero kids in an apartment and like I'm like I don't live
and you're stressing.
I live stupid. I live stupidly. I will
I
say that. I'm not wanting much in life.
Right.
But I also don't have expensive taste. So when I say I'm not wanting much in life, it means like I don't ration cannabis anymore.
Sure. I used to be so, I would like, oh, you're paying in weed? Yeah, let me do this show often so I can like collect my weed for the month and then, you know, not have to spend that.
Oh, right, and then you're like, shit, I'm a little broke. Oh, but I do have that quarter ounce I just got. So that's practically $180.
Exactly, and then you fucking sleep a little better.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. Like when I did after midnight, they were roasting me because I fucking swept the snacks into my bag.
Oh,
like,
I don't. That's what I have right here. This I took. I actually yelled at my friend Katie McVeigh came, and she just started grabbing snacks, and I was like, "How dare you grab my truffles, bitch? Do you know?"
I love it. I come home and my wife's like, "Ooh, what'd you get?" And I'm like, "We're going through all the snacks," and it's like, I'm doing this show that's on a network that's on CBS that is fun. I'm riffing with funny people, Megan Gailey and Taylor Ortega. And then I come home and the thing I'm most excited about is like, babe, four different kinds of chips.
They're because I travel so much, so they're great travel snacks. A lot of them are super healthy.
Dude, I love
tasty.
This. My Headgum, the podcast company that produces this podcast, when I go into the studio, I go into the kitchen. There's always like, you know, grass-fed beef sticks or like electrolyte packets. Yep. And I'm just
like, yoink, yoink. And you're also, and you play it off. You're like, oh, I'm going to eat this during the taping. And then, oh, I guess I never got to this. This is going in my purse.
I literally told the social media person at After Midnight, I'm like, let's do a bit where I like fill my bag. You film me filling up my bag. And they were like, okay. And then I like just filled it, zipped it closed, and like took it all home with me.
Dude, I was making suggestions to the crafty the first time I was there because I was like, here's how to improve this situation because here's what's missing. I take that shit very serious. Man, that original At Midnight used to give you vegan cookies. That was like a box of them. They were so delicious.
They used to straight up make you, I mean, I guess you can get drinks from the new After Midnight too, but At Midnight used to be like, tequila soda again, Gabrus? I'd be like, yeah, fuck it.
Oh,
sure.
They're doing that. They're doing it at this one too. You just got to let them know that's what you're up to. I texted before I got onto the first one because Carl had been wanting booze. I guess he was too pussy to ask. And so once I found that out, once he told me that, I was like, oh no, I'm texting. I'm like, hey, you guys got alcohol? Because I'm going to bring my own if you don't. I need a little something.
They were like, oh, do you want to drink this time? I'm like, no, I'm okay. They're like, you took a car, though? I'm like, yep. They're like, why? I'm like, I don't know. I didn't want to park.
Yeah. No, they got worried about me last night. They're like, do you need an Uber? And I'm like, oh, because I had tequila. And I'm like, and these 20-year-olds, they don't fucking know what people's tolerance is.
Yeah, they don't know that I've been drinking every weekend since I was 12.
Yeah.
Like, I'm and I'm 300 pounds. Like, I'm gonna need more than four tequilas.
I mean, and that's the other thing. I think because I'm thin, people think that I get drunk fast. No, I'm still a lot of body.
You still have a lot of surface area.
Yeah, there's a lot of body with me. And
you have the liver of a 6'2" person.
Exactly.
You are thin, but you are 6'2".
Yes, that's right. I got the liver over 6'2". So I was like, yeah, I need another one. You want me to be funny? I need another one.
Hey, I'm here. I know you guys are paying me, but also if I drink four tequilas while I'm here, I'll count that towards like my, I'll be like, this is actually a really nice day if I made here.
It is.
Marcella, I'm truly, thank you so much for doing the pod. I'm truly stoked of the idea of leaving town. I feel like
a lot of people, and when they find out that I'm doing that, they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, guys, I love comedy so much. I'm leaving LA.
I do know in the past you've written on some shows. Like, that doesn't mean you're fucking can't ever come back to the city, but do you feel like...
I hated writing on television. Dude, we could keep talking for hours and hours because I fucking hated writing for television. It was
because that would be
so
the main
dumb.
Reason for a stand-up to want to stay here is because you get a chance to do punch-up, write for shows, maybe do a guest star on, you know, some TV show or something.
Absolutely,
like that.
But yeah. I also feel like now, because I'm 18 years in, and so, like, I'm friends with everybody. So I'm just like, if people want me on their show, they can write me into the show if they want. Like, I can audition. Like, we can do that whole thing. But everybody
that would be
knows.
The same thing would happen from LA anyway.
Exactly. Like, I've put the years in, and it's like everybody knows I'm always fucking. Nobody even knows where I'm at usually. That's the funniest part. Is like people will invite me out to stuff, and they're like, "Wait, what town are you in right now?" And I'm like, "It's fucking. I'm not in your town. That's all you need to know." And it's just been that thing where it's like. I've loved stand-up and traveling to do... I'd rather travel to do stand-up than be stuck in L.A. wondering when the next gig is, which only got worse with the double strike, you know?
Right.
And in fact, the double strike made me be like, I'm not going to pay my writer's union dues anymore. Like, I hate writing for television. Like, I don't need to waste this money anymore. This is not for me. I do want to still be in SAG because I do want to be myself on television any chance I fucking get.
Right.
Which is, you know, After Midnight. And, Not the time, guys, the show. And I'm just like, as long as I have that, like that also helped me be like, I can leave confidently when like I'm doing this show. And that means that assuming it gets renewed, like I can just come back every like 4 months, plug a date and then fucking get back on the road. Like
fly in, do two shows, do that. Yeah. It's like, cause that's what I'm realizing is like, you know, I do a lot of other people's shows. I do other people's podcasts, but so much is over Zoom. Mm-hmm. So much of my booking gigs is off self-tapes. I mean, I don't even book that much.
Right.
And when I do, it's off a self-tape. And right now, the things that I'm like close on that I'm waiting to hear back about all shoot out of town and I'm acting as a local for them. Bro, anyway, so it's
that's
like,
the other thing that makes me so mad is everybody's like, are you local? Where are you based out of? And it's like, no. Are you going to give me this gig? Because we all know anybody can be based out of anywhere. Like we're now at this point, we're all homied up. We all got somewhere we could crash if we fucking book a week long gig. Stop acting like everybody needs to be fucking local. They don't. Yeah.
And these jobs don't happen frequently, and they happen even less frequently now due to how slowed down the business is, how siloed it's become with big names taking all the jobs. Like, right. They are just less of them going around. There's no need, like, it's less imperative that I be in the LA area because they're like, tomorrow, can you be on Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Right. Like, that happens so infrequently
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
Like, no one even has coffee meetings anymore. You know what I mean? It's not like it's not like, oh shit. Like the only reason you might want to live in LA is to potentially do one of those one-on-one Maria Bamford shows that she does to practice her material. That
Seriously. Sounds
exciting. But no one's like, we should meet for coffee. They're like, we can get on a Zoom or a call or if that's even a conversation. Like that doesn't even happen.
No, isn't that funny? Like that's the thing I will give the pandemic is that it made everything more accessible for everyone, which I think is good. But it definitely proved that you do not need to be in LA to have any type of success. You don't.
No, especially as it's just getting more and more expensive and less enjoyable here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're getting less for what you put in these days. Like, you know, there's not even like industry parties anymore. It like used to be like worth it to be in town to be like, I got invited to the Funny or Die Christmas party.
Right.
That shit. And Funny or Die is a great example because like it used to be like a way I could make a couple $100 every once in a while being in some dumb sketch. But then I would also have a video to promote and two new actors and a director and a writer that I worked with. So it felt, but all of that shit is gone. All that little fun shit is gone.
The difference is too, let's say Funny or Die was still as popular it was when it was, you know, at its height. Like if it was right now doing what it used to do for people back in the day, what would be shitty about it is they would be stressing that, oh, how many followers do you have? You need to make sure that you plug this and you need to like, it's no longer, we're no longer doing this shit because it's fun and it's cool. And the people that are, you know, putting money towards it are like, we think you're fun.
Fans,
and we think you're cool. Yeah. We want to work together. We want to establish this relationship. We want to build something together. We want you to be loyal to us. No, it's not.
Hey,
that.
Look, I know you're not, you don't have 250,000 followers. You don't have a huge podcast. You're not a TV star, but I like your comedy, Marcella. So I'm going to champion you, get you in here because I think you're funny and I think other people will when they get the chance. There is nobody doing that for directors, actors, comics, musicians.
That's not happening
anymore. No, if you're not already established, you have to like break in like by accident and in like a flaming way. You have
it's
to come
so
storming
sad.
I
do feel bad for the younger generation. I also am like when they all of these because they've been trying to reboot At Midnight for years now. I think that this was their third time actually trying to. This time they actually did it. And I just remember thinking like, oh, when that shit comes back, I'm going to finally be on TV again. Like this has been so brutal because it's like I don't have all those followers and it's been so frustrating. And to be blessed enough that I'm not just on the list of the original at Midnight people, but on the list of the one of the current bookers like faves. Like it's such a blessing. And that and one of the bookers has known me from like the New York comedy days. Like I've known her for over 10 years. I've known, you know, like
Marianne.
Yeah. I don't want people bothering anybody. but you know, like I'm so fortunate that I had that because people are now texting me like, Marcella, how do I get on? And I'm like, bro, I can't tell you. And I'm not out here just recommending anybody to anybody because they all have huge lists of people to go through.
Yeah, no, please. There's too much. Fuck. I don't need any more people doing comedy. Stay home.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously, everybody give up.
I want to move to some fucking crusty beach town and just be like...
You should. You got the sunburn for it right now.
I know, dude. I've been walking the dog shirtless as the weather has changed. I'm going to Puerto Rico next week, so I want a little bit of a base.
Oh,
so
wow.
I've been out there shirtless.
That's
popping
cute.
Off. Yeah. Yeah, I'm 42 years old, and my one vacation this year is my mom taking me and my two brothers and our partners for her 65th birthday.
I love that.
Yeah. No, I would not turn it down, but it is, again, another humbling part of the industry of like, yeah. Hey, you don't go on a lot of vacations. You have to treat your weekend in Denver as your vacation, even though you're working two shows each night or whatever.
I fucking was like, I went to Alaska, whatever, 2 weekends ago, and I was like, I'm going to treat this like a little mini vacation for that same reason. And I got sick. So the one day I could do something, I was like sick in bed, recovering so I could be fine for the flight the next day. It was awful. It was fucking awful. I was like, I need a vacation for real.
Alaska's still like one of the states I haven't been to.
So oh my God. Yeah. Go. They had this, because you're a drinker. Are you a drinker still?
Yeah. I mean, I still drink every once in a while, but I'm not, I don't party hard that much anymore.
But you don't have to, but they have this cool ass bar. I forget the name of the space, but it's like seven bars attached to one. Like they all lead into the other, and there's like the one that's downstairs, and they all have like their own vibe.
Themes
there was like
and vibes. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, there was one you went downstairs, and like there was just underwear hanging off the wall. I didn't go in there. I didn't want to get pink eye because it was so low hanging. But
yeah, you're too tall for the underwear.
It was disgusting. Yeah. But they had all this, it was just very fucking cool. It's where they had the after party, but there was like one bar that had like a stage, one bar that had a fucking arcade bar, one bar had different things, and they had like five or six DJs. You could literally like walk through the door, there was another DJ, another bar. It was so cool, and I'm not even a big drinker, but I was like, this is like, what a fun night this would be. And then, because I had been in Texas the weekend before, and they don't sell liquor in Dallas. You can't buy it from a store after 10 p.m., which I didn't know. So we got kind of fucked over at the venue. But it was also like you could drink at a bar, but you couldn't drink, you know, on your own, which was fucking weird. And then so it prompted the question when I was in Alaska, when I was at that bar, I was like, so what time does this bar close? And they're like, whenever they want to close it. And I was like, what? This is crazy.
They're like, it's nighttime all the time.
Yeah,
here.
It's just daytime all the time. Nighttime all the time. Daytime too. It's crazy. And I was like, yeah, these people, no wonder they're fucking weirdos. Shout out to Alaska. That was a fun show. A couple shows I did. And yeah, you would love that place. You should go. Alaska's very cool. When you can finally afford it.
I will. All I need is a few more advertisers. You hear that, Athletic Greens? Come through for old man Gabrus. Let me go to Alaska and pitch the powers of prebiotics and probiotics in a glass every morning. Woo! Sorry. got weird there. Marcella,
his fucking eyes glazed over when he was doing that.
Yeah, I just went to fucking ad mode. Mm-hmm. This episode comes out this Thursday, so if you have any dates coming up, people could be there. Oh, or if you have any shows.
Well, if you're in Chicago, I have a new monthly stand-up show called Comedy is Dead. The first date is May 31st. They're all kind of different dates. I think that they're going to start regularly on a Thursday. I actually have no idea. The schedule is ridiculous.
May 31st.
I'm excited about that. And I'm headlining Dallas in August. I'm headlining Des Moines, Iowa, June 14th.
Heard of it?
Yeah, heard of it. I had two. I've heard of it. I have no idea if I have an audience there. If you're there, come check me out. It's gonna be a fun one.
Awesome.
Sure I have other days. I have an HBO Max special called Bitch Grow Up. Check that out.
I love that one. It's early on in the early on, but I love the joke. Here are the things I don't want to answer again. I don't play volleyball. I don't play basketball. And then you go, and the tops of all your fridges are nasty.
Yeah. Dude,
it's so true.
It's so true.
The tops of fridges are the last remaining
disgusting,
dusty place.
Disgusting, sticky, greasy. People do not look at them. They're fucking
cleaning
ladies, they're all fuzzy.
Don't reach them. Yeah.
greasy and fuzzy. They're disgusting.
Yeah.
They're disgusting.
Yeah. It's like after you moisturize and then hair falls on it and you can't get it off. But you're like, it's there forever now.
It's one of my oldest jokes, and I hadn't done it in years, and I was like, I'm going to do it on the special because it's just a funny joke, and I love it because people actually, because of me, refrigerators across America all have their clean tops,
Well, it is one of those things, like, someone will go to someone else's house and go, like, the top of your fridge is nasty, and they'll be like, oh, I know, we got to clean it. It's like, yeah, I learned to look at people's because of Marcella's, you know what I mean? Like, you get activated, and that's one of those perspectives. We talked about how River was dropping trans perspectives that you we wouldn't necessarily
never thought
understand.
About. You don't even
but not a lot of people would understand the 6'2" perspective either.
Yeah, literally.
Especially a woman's 6'2" perspective.
Exactly. So it's funny because I to this day I get messages of people telling me they clean the tops of their fridge. Like, people will invite me over to their house and they'll be like, and I clean the top of my fridge.
Yeah. Look at, check out what I did up here.
Yeah, that's like, so I'm funny. Actually going to look, which is hilarious. I'm like, I guess.
Hey, thank you for coming over, Marcel. Can you grab that book for me on the top shelf? That's the whole reason I invited you. Also, check out Comedy is Dead on YouTube. It's lo-fi in a way that I really enjoy. Like, in the one of the ones I watched recently, you had to move rooms like 3 times.
Oh my god, yeah. It was backstage. I wanted to try something new, so I was like, let me do this backstage after a set mistake.
I thought that was cool. And
I was like, you gotta roll with the it's also just like, I hate that everybody thinks everything has to be like high I'm just tired of shit being high production value and being worthless to listen to and watch.
Yeah, I'm tired of production value coming first.
Ugh.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, polish up something that is pretty sharp already. We don't have to polish exclusively turds.
Yeah, but that's also part of the problem with the way people are consuming. They think as long as it looks cool, that means it's good.
Right. And that means it's like, that gives me the markers that what I'm watching is a quality product, even if I don't dive in on like my comedy taste.
Yeah.
Or the performer's perspective or whatever. It just looks cool or is edited well, or the font they chose for their captions is cute or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they're very good looking, and that's enough
right.
to stick around for some
right.
reason.
Yeah.
Like, and like 8 comics off the rip that I'm thinking of there. But that being said, check out all Marcella's shit. As for my shit, you know it. I got the Action Boys podcast, my other podcast. Also, this weekend, 4/20, April 20th, a huge Columbine anniversary show. No, I'm doing the high and mighty mega sesh. We're going to be smoking weed. We got a lot of great guests. Ron Funches is doing the show. John Gamberling, Ashley Ray, and a few other guests. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be live and live stream, so you can come see it at the Dynasty Typewriter in Los Angeles, Saturday, 4/20 at 7:30. Or it'll be up for a week after on live stream, and you can watch that from wherever, if you're couch locked or in the couch and can't make it out or whatever, you live outside of the LA area. All those tickets are for sale at 420.gabris.com. So 420.gabris.com. Check it out. Bye, shitheads.
Bye.
Bye. Signing off.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy, I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow,
body blow, body.
Someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action Boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on! Do it now!